Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thanks for spending part of your day with us, whether you are listening on the radio, online, or on demand. I am grateful you are here on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And to honor Dr. King today, we're revisiting some conversations we've had that speak to the messages of the civil rights movement. Writing in The Nation in 2015, the late renowned writer Toni Morrison said this about civil rights and the arts, quote, "There is no time for despair. No place for self-pity, no need for silence, no room for fear. We speak, we write, we do language. That is how civilizations heal. I know the world is bruised and bleeding, and though it is important not to ignore its pain, it is also critical to refuse to succumb to its malevolence. Like failure, chaos contains information that can lead to knowledge, even wisdom, like art." First, we'll continue our Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day show with a look at Black theater. For the past few years, WNYC and Harlem's famed Apollo Theater have teamed up to put on an event honoring Dr. King. This year, the event's theme was Activism and the Arts. At 7 p.m. this evening, you can catch a full video of the event at WNYC.org. It's an interview series moderated by WNYC's Jamie Floyd, Brian Lehrer, The Takeaway's Melissa Harris-Perry, WQXR's Terrence McKnight, and myself. I sat down over Zoom with a pair of guests from the theater world, Jonathan McCrory, the director of the National Black Theater of Harlem, and Trezana Beverly, the first African-American actress to receive a Tony for Best Featured Actress in a Play for the 1977 Broadway play For Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide, When the Rainbow Is Enough. So now let's listen to my conversation with Trezana and Jonathan about the intersection of activism and theater. Jonathan, Trezana, thank you for being with us today.
My joy. Pleasure.
Pleasure.
Trezana, I'm going to start with you. How is theater uniquely positioned to address issues of civil rights?
Because theater is social. Mm. Theater is a social window to the world. And everything that theater does is social. And theater also reflects the politics of the era that it lives in, the generation that lives in that era. We always have artists. Artists are a part of the universal makeup. And so in the 70s, you had the protest movements. In the 60s, the mid 60s, you had protest theaters. And I tell the world, you could walk out on the street and get a job, because the writers were so prolific. There was so much to write about. And everybody was, doing theater and representing, African-American people and the issues that we were dealing with at that time. Mm.
Jonathan, why do you think theater is valuable when it comes to addressing issues of civil rights?
I mean, I think it becomes valuable because of that very same nature that Trezana brought up so beautifully and eloquently, the idea of gathering. The idea of actually creating intentional space around a particular topic. It's the only art form that really awakens and actually says, we are going to find a space. We are going to invite a community, and the community doesn't have to be people who are like-minded. The community doesn't, but just people, humans. We're going to invite humans into a space. We're going to have a conversation with those humans around a particular topic. And it's going to be through a vantage point that is through the lens of these artists. And that art is about awakening the hearts and minds of folks, right? It's not about triggering or charge. It's charging you with a kind of a passion mission, a love mission, right? A joy mission. I think that artists are always striving to illuminate their joy through their craft, and for that very reason, it becomes a very palpable and very important space to have social impact issues actually at the forefront of it. And it always is latent inside of it. A point of view, it comes from a space of that vantage point. So I would just uplift that theater is an essential aspect to that gathering catalytic momentum when we actually talk about social justice, and we actually talk about social change. And when we think about even in our current frame of the George Floyd moment and when the civic unrest happened, theater was happening in not necessarily buildings, but on the streets. The way in which people were expressing themselves and creating creative ways of letting us know how the civic how that situation was living inside their bodies and creating communal gatherings outdoors. I think that is another way in which we can look at theater that's not so formalized. Sometimes we take the Western gaze of theater as the way in which we should be leaning forward. And I think the indigenous aspect of it, which is sometimes not in that formal space of a theatrical proscenium or in that theatrical home, is equally as important as the latter.
Shazana, I'm going to brag on you for a moment for people who don't know that you were the first African-American actress to win Best Actress Tony for Colored Girls in the late 70s. I think I may have seen it because I am pretty sure my mom and dad and I went to see it two or three times, grew up in the area. So it is a pleasure and an honor to speak with you. What did you think when you first read that play?
Well, I loved it. I mean, it immediately resonated, you know, with me. I'll tell you something funny because, you know, we were very young. We were kids. I mean, you know, I think I might have been 25. And, you know, we were just coming into our own as young theater actors. And I remember saying to Oz Scott, because he called me, he said, "Trisana, I've got this piece. I want you to do it, blah, blah, blah." And I said, "Is there any money in it?" Because, you know, we were struggling actresses, you know, and he said, Trisana. Okay. So we met at the Arcadia restaurant bar down on the Lower East Side with Aoife Young, who is Aunt Izaki's sister and a wonderful writer and designer herself. And we sat around and we talked about it. And then we, you know, ended up, you know, going to each other's apartments and shuffling through the scripts. And we started the workshop production of it down on the Lower East Side at Club de Montes, which was, you know, at that time it was called ABC City. And we were in this little small room with a Christmas tree and a 3x4 stage and a pinball machine. And I remember saying to Lori Carlos, I said, "Do you think this play is going to go anywhere?" and she said, "You know, I don't know." I said, "Well, you know, I just think it's too experimental." I said, I don't think they're going to, you know, of course, you know, God proved me a liar and the rest is history.
Jonathan, when you think about the playwrights and the creatives of the 60s and the 70s, is there any one that particularly stands out for you, or do you have any that have been really inspirational for you?
I mean, in the current frame, I mean, there have been actually a lot, but the one that comes that pops to the front of my mind at this current moment is Amiri Baraka, and it's actually not necessarily his play, but his writing, A Call for Revolutionary Theater, which for me was an igniting force. It helped me to curate another series that I did in 2020 called A Call for Revolutionary Theater 2020, where it brought a bunch of Black theater professionals, practitioners, to actually talk about and inspired by Mary Baraka's essay, which really leaned into the promise and to the premise of What does it mean in the midst of in his time and at the precipice of what would become the Black Arts Movement, another pandemic? He was in the midst of a pandemic in 1968, the assassination of MLK, all these things that were happening. One could say there was a mirroring effect that was happening in 2020. And so then what does that call, that lean in of that call, mean for the current Black artists? How do we ignite some of the beautiful legacy torchbearers? Trizana brought up Lori Carlos, who is now who has transitioned. And was a fierce, fierce, fierce advocate for ritualistic theater, helped to frame that space for ritualistic theater. So when we start to think about how as an emerging, and I still consider myself an emerging practitioner inside of this field, when I think about the torches that I have to hold up and light up, and that are part of my pathology and part of my practice, I think of someone like a Mary Brock, I think of someone like a Lori Carlos, and I think of also someone like a Paul Carter Harrison, all legacy bearers, yes, all torch yes. bearers who really helped to shape and frame the aesthetics that I get to now play in. And create the foundation for me to be able to do the work that I do today.
Trizana, did you want to add to that?
Yes, I'm thinking of the work that Woody King Jr. has done with the New Federal Theater. Mm-hmm. You know, most of the Black actors that you are seeing on screen now pass through the New Federal Theater. Denzel Washington, Felicia Rashad, the list goes on. And the work of the Negro Ensemble, the National Actors Theater, the theater that Sidney Poitier came out of. And those actors were very political in their perspective and mindset. You had Anna Lucasta, which was the first play on Broadway from that theater company. Ozzie Davis and Ruby Dee. They were political activists. They branched out to have a theater that would speak to African American men and women who wanted to become professional actors, and they went on to become great actors. Political theater slash activist theater, I have thought within the framework of Black theater can't be anything other than theater that is created by activists, people who have a sense of the world and how it can change and how we can hold a mirror up to our world.
That's a lovely segue to something I wanted to ask you, Jonathan, about not only your work as a creative, as a director and a writer, but the way you write about the theater industry. There've been all kinds of conversations about gatekeepers, who are the reviewers, who are the people greenlighting projects. What's important to you when you think about those things? What's important for people to think about those things as we try to make theater more inclusive?
Yeah, I mean, I really have had to sit with and actually have a conversation about, where am I contributing to an anti-Blackness society? How is my curation a part of that? I don't necessarily think I could probably be a racist, but I do think I could be anti-Black. I think in my curation, I could be holding up a torch to only a particular type of people. I could be excluding other people. And so then how do I create conditions and a season and access that doesn't promote an anti-Blackness pathology, like a theory of only these certain people get kind of productions, or only these people are supported by. I mean, for the space that I get to home as executive artistic director of the National Black Theater, right? There is a gate that I get to really tend, mold, and shape yearly, daily, someone can even say. And so therefore it becomes really important for me to acknowledge that I am a gatekeeper, and then for me to then have a conversation about, so then what do I have to work about for myself in order to be able to curate from a lens that's not by my biases or that actually challenges my biases? So I would say any curator, any audience member, I think it becomes important to to try and test and to experiment. I think it becomes important to be open and receptive. And I also think it becomes really important to understand how our conditioning, how we grew up, what we were given access to, what we were told was good or bad, defines who also we say are not worthy. Also defines who we somewhat say we don't want to hear that story from. And sometimes that story is a story that we need for our own salvation, our own healing. So I would just say leaning into that question that you asked, I think it becomes really important for us to take self-assessment of who we are and actually allow for ourselves to figure out how does our humanity come into conversation, not our conditioning.
To finish up, as I was reading and listening to tributes to Sidney Poitier, there was an interesting answer he gave to an interviewer in 1967 about him being the first Black man to win the Academy Award. And the interviewer was asking, do you think film has gone far enough, or is film leading the way for Black actors? And Mr. Poitier responded, "The Academy Award is a representation of film, not theater. Theater is ahead of film. I don't think that film has shown the kind of leadership that theater and TV has." This was 1967. What do you think about that statement in 2022? I'll let you go first, Trizana.
Well, I tell my students that, and I have a very mixed group of students, and I speak to my young African-American ladies and gentlemen. I tell them, I says, you've come along at a wonderful time because the ceiling is cracking. You know, we are able to have women of color who have different body types, different complexions. You look at me, I'm very fair skin. And when I was in that age group, starting out as an actress, if you were too fair or too dark skinned, you didn't get a job. The cafe au lait sister was always hired. And that was something we had to deal with. So, you know, girls, you know, Rosalind Cash. I showed them films about Rosalind Cash. Rosalind was the first sister to wear dreads and locks. And, you know, and she stood her ground, you know, because, you know, they did not want to see that sister up there with that identity in her hairstyle. And I tell my kids, I says, you know, do know that you're coming along at a wonderful time. People have suffered and fought to pave the way for you to get here and have a greater exposure on the screen. We did not have that because it has been a very cosmetic industry. Mm-hmm. Many times has nothing to do with your talent, but everything to do with what you look like and who you know. Whereas the theater, and that's why I rather like British theater, because the Brits really don't, you know, cling to those kinds of issues with what you look like, what your teeth look like, what your hair, ageism, all of those things. So there is, even though it's not enough and it still needs to open up more, we know that. But there has been progress. And thank God for those people who have stood up to those spirits and said, no, we need to have our great artists get out there. We need to tell our stories. I'm so proud of our sisters. They are directing up and down the wall, and they are great directors. Those women know what they're doing.
Jonathan?
How does Uplifting say, and I second everything that Trizana has uplifted. I would just add to it that theater, I think, will always be, I think, one step ahead of film, because it is tapping into a very human desire and need for in-person contact and community. It is a very ancient ritualistic form. Sometimes the most ancient is the most innovative. We have still not really learned how to be 100% ourselves with ourselves in space. And theater strives to do that with every gathering it creates, every moment that it creates. And in the space of COVID-19 as a disruptor to the very nature of theater, mm-hmm. is having to innovate even further to create courageous spaces for audiences to want to come back in and say hello to each other, and also feel safe enough to be in to sit down and witness witness a performance, and while performers also are having to create spaces that are courageous enough for them to want to even stay and do the work. So I think there is an element of theater that's inherently always a little bit above the curve, and that is because it's tapping into the very nature of we're having to share air for a durational period of time. You don't do that with any other art form, and that language is a part of that shared air, which is in my personal opinion the craft, if you want to, like, the magic of us all, right? It's the witchcraft of us all. It's the conjure of us all. It's the sacred of us all. It's what actually articulates and manifests the future. So there's an element of theater that is inherently always just a little bit above.
Trezana Beverly and Jonathan McCrory, thank you so much for your time. This was great.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Enjoy. Thank you.
That was my conversation with Jonathan McCrory, the director of the National Black Theater of Harlem, and actress Trezana Beverly. It's from this year's Martin Luther King Day event at Harlem's Apollo Theater. WNYC will be playing the full event on air at 3 p.m. and 8 p.m. today, so be sure to tune in. And if you want to see the rest of that event, head to WNYC.org at 7 p.m. tonight, where you can watch video of the event in full.